Shame on you. It was said of the Bereans in the book of Acts that they were a noble people. Why? Because they tested and proved the scriptures. They studied the scriptures to see if what Paul said was true. May this be true of each and every one of us, that we might understand and know the scriptures. In fact, Daniel, in chapter 11, verse 32, speaks of these end times events. Daniel, of course, was a prophet of God who spoke of the end times. And in his chapter 11 of his book, his prophetic work, in verse 32, he says, there will be wickedness in the end times, and many will be deceived, but those who do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. May that be true of each and every one of us, that we know our God. And that knowing is an intimate knowing. That knowing is a focused, a clear, a pure knowing, a knowing somebody like Francis and Isaine know one another because of their deep love. Like any of you who are married and together with someone, you know that person. This is a knowing that goes even beyond that, this knowing, this intimacy with God, because why? He sees everything about you. As we sang, even the things we try to hide, he sees through holy eyes. So there's nothing we can hide from him. There's an intimacy that's available with him. And I urge you, I invite you to pursue that intimacy. It requires humility. It requires transparency, to be honest about our faults and failures and our leanings, our preferences, our just everything. Intimacy. Why? Because they that do know their God shall be strong. And we will need strength in these days. My particular belief is that these are last days. Now, to qualify that, Paul also thought that the days when he was living were last days. And if you read the writings of the New Testament authors, you'll find out they all expected the imminent return of Jesus Christ. I mean, it was like, it's going to happen. In fact, Paul thought it would happen in his lifetime. Why do you suppose the Holy Spirit inspired that kind of language in the Scriptures? You know, we're told that many will say in these days, where is the promise of his coming? It has been a long time. But everything continues just as it was. And they will begin to misuse people, misuse their influence and authority and power and relationships. They'll begin to abuse relationships. Those people will begin to live as if it's not true. He's not coming. And Jesus said here, you got to watch. You got to pay attention. Because he's coming at a time you do not expect. And as we go through these passages in the coming weeks, and I encourage you, prior to coming to service, read Mark chapter 11. Read Matthew chapter 24 and 25. We're going to be covering these things so that you can have some understanding, some clarity, and a better understanding as we go through them what these days are going to look like and who Jesus is addressing, whom he's addressing. Because the passage that we just read, Jesus seems to be addressing not the whole church initially, but the Jewish people. And then he transitions. And he actually answers the disciples' second question first. They said, what will be the signs that this is about to happen? And Jesus answers the what before the when. And then he goes on to address the when. But you heard his answer to the when. Nobody knows. He doesn't even know, but the Father only knows. So all the predictions about when things are going to happen, all the people who think they know that the rapture is coming this year, and we'll talk about what rapture is, and that the Antichrist is coming and all those things that are going to be happening that they think they can predict, it's just foolishness and presumption and arrogance and pride. We don't know. That's why Jesus says over and over and over again, watch. In fact, it's interesting because three times in chapter 13, he says, take heed. Take heed. Now, it's translated differently sometimes. Take heed. It's translated once, watch out for yourselves. Take heed, see. But basically, the same Greek word is translated in all three cases. So three times Jesus says, take heed. And we talked about this last week. What that means is to see with the physical eye, but beyond the physical perception, you need to perceive with your spiritual eye. You need to see beyond what is on the surface and understand what's taking place. See beyond what's in front of you. To understand what's behind the scenes. Because there is a spiritual war taking place all around us. At every moment. There are dimensions of this world that we cannot be in contact with except by prayer. Take heed. Perceive beyond just what is visible to your eye. And then three times within this small range of verses, beginning in verse 32 to 36, Jesus once again repeats the admonition of take heed, and then he says, watch and pray. And he says, watch three times. What does he mean? Stay awake. Stay awake. You see, we really can't, unless we've taken heed and seen and perceived beyond what is just visible, we're not going to be capable of staying awake. Do you remember Jesus in the garden with his disciples? He said to them, watch and pray that you enter not into temptation. And he went off and he sought his Father and agonized over what was coming. The separation between he and the Father coming was agonizing for him. And yet he came back and he found them sleeping. They couldn't see beyond that moment. All they could perceive was their own fatigue, exhaustion. And what did Jesus say? The flesh is weak, but the spirit is willing. We've got to see with the eyes of the spirit. We've got to perceive through the spirit's eyes what is behind the visible. And to do that, we must watch and pray. Watch and pray. How much watching and praying are you doing? One of the main reasons we need to do this is Jesus said that you be not deceived. Because there are spirits in this world, lying spirits, deceiving spirits, and they operate through human beings oftentimes, and they will deceive many, Jesus said. In fact, there are those coming who will be able to do miracles. And there will be those who find that fascinating and enthralling, and they will begin to follow and worship a false Christ because they don't know this word. They don't know the spirit behind the word. They don't understand. They don't perceive. And therefore, they can't stay awake to threatening dangers. And that's what this means. Stay awake to threatening dangers. Now, understand that the reason that Jesus wants us to both perceive and to stay awake or to watch is not so that we can protect ourselves. It's so that we can prepare ourselves. And guess who's responsible for preparing you? Don't put that on me. It ain't me. Now, I have a job to do, and I do it to the best of my ability, but you are ultimately responsible. And you will not be able to stand before the Lord and say, "Lord, my pastor didn't teach me." Well, then you need another pastor. Now, I love you, and I want you to stay, but if you're not getting anything from me, go someplace where you can get something from somebody. And I don't mean that. I had a pastor one time who was kind of an angry guy, and he said, "You know, those doors in the back, they swing both ways." I'm not doing that. I'm just saying, man, I think we're getting decent food here. Let's eat together. Okay? So let's take heed. Let's pay attention. Let's stay awake, alert to threatening dangers. Peter said that we have been given everything that we need for life and godliness. Anybody remember that passage? Everything that we've been needed for life, we need for life and godliness. And if you remember that passage, you remember what comes next. Anybody remember it? I think it's, let me turn it to either 1 Peter or 2 Peter. Those are only two choices. He only wrote two letters to the church. This is what happens when you don't come prepared, right? He said, look, I'm going to just paraphrase it for you. You've been given everything you need for life and godliness through the knowledge of Him, through the knowledge of Christ. There's nothing that you will need in this life that God has not already provided to you. There's no situation you will face in this life that is not addressed in this book. Now, that doesn't mean that every situation in your life is addressed in this book, does it? But everything that is in this book is able to teach us, and everything that you need to live a life of godliness and righteousness is recorded in this book. And whatever you need to know, apart from this, you may ask the Spirit of God and He will guide and direct you. But these warnings are not here to protect us, but to prepare us. I'm going to read to you from Luke. Luke chapter 21. Come on, Luke. Luke chapter 21. This is so interesting. Luke, this is another part of the conversation that Jesus was having with His disciples about end times, just recorded a little bit differently by Luke. And in verse 10, Luke chapter 21, He, Jesus, said to them, nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be great earthquakes in various places and famines and pestilences, and there will be fearful sights and great signs from heaven. But before all these things, they will lay hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to the synagogues and prisons. You will be brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake, but it will turn out for you as an occasion for testimony. Therefore, settle it in your hearts not to meditate beforehand on what you will answer, for I will give you a mouth and wisdom, which all your adversaries will not be able to contradict or resist. You will be betrayed even by parents and brothers, relatives and friends, and they will put some of you to death, and you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but not a hair of your head will be lost. By your patience, possess your souls. Years ago, when I was just a kid, I was about 14, I wanted to play football, and so I started playing football in my sophomore year in high school. Is that ninth grade? So ninth grade, I started playing football. And I was on the junior varsity team, and the coaches put me in a position on defense. I don't even remember the position, to be honest with you. And I just was getting pushed around all over the place. I mean it. I was just getting pushed around. I was a little bit timid, didn't really understand the game, didn't understand how it should be played, didn't know how much aggression to use. And one of my coaches pulled me aside and he said, if you don't start hitting somebody, you're going to get killed out there. And I learned a great lesson from that. So that I bumped up the aggression level to the point where a year later, they had a nickname for me because I won all the one-on-one drills because I understood that this was preparation. See, I was trying to protect myself, and that's not the way to stay uninjured. The way to stay uninjured is to go 100% all out, every moment, all the time, no shrinking back. And I tell you that story because that's what Jesus is calling for. Not for self-protection. He's not saying, watch out, be careful. This is not your mother before you go on the football field saying, now be careful, don't get hurt. He's telling us so that we prepare for action. Prepare ourselves for the most intense action that we have ever had in our lives. And I want you to hear this again because it may have escaped you. In Luke chapter 21, you will be brought before kings. He said you'll be persecuted. That means, that word persecute means pursued. People will pursue you. Not to pat you on the back. Not to congratulate you for such a great life. People will pursue you to harm you and to constrain you. I wonder if anybody's ever been constrained by their family when it comes to their religious zeal. They will pursue you. And that is called persecution. You can expect it. He said they're going to deliver you up to the synagogues and prisons. A lot of the persecution is going to come from the religious community. It just is. It was true in Jesus' day. It's true now. There'll be those who sit behind you in church. Well, I don't know why they need to raise their hands like that. I don't know who they think they are. I don't know who that person thinks that prays before a service. I could do that. And they will try to bring you down. Don't be a Jesus freak. You don't want people to be annoyed with you. You don't want people to be turned off by you. You know the definition of a Jesus freak? Somebody who loves Jesus more than you. Somebody who loves Jesus more than you. The religious community will be the most intensely against your love for Jesus and your pursuit of intimacy with him. So they'll deliver you up in the synagogues. They just knew that meant church. And they'll put you in prison. You'll be brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake. You're going to be on trial. That's what he's telling them. But it will turn out for you on this occasion for a testimony. Therefore, settle it in your hearts not to meditate beforehand on what you will answer, for I will give you a mouth and wisdom that your adversaries will not be able to contradict or resist. If this ever happens to you, it is the coolest thing. That you said something, it's probably happened to many of you. You said something and you wondered, where did that come from? God spoke through you into a situation and it made a difference. Sometimes it makes somebody angry. Other times, it'll bring somebody to tears. But God will give you a mouth and wisdom that your adversaries will not be able to contradict or resist. You're going to be betrayed, verse 16. You will be betrayed even by parents, brothers, relatives, and friends. Doesn't that feel good, betrayal? Anybody here ever not been betrayed? See, a stranger can't betray you, can they? But somebody you love and respect can. Somebody close to you can. Imagine Jesus' betrayal at the hand of Judas. How that must have felt. The psalmist talked about it. The psalmist said, if it were an enemy that betrayed me, I could take it, but it was a friend, a companion, a confidant. How painful. And some of you know that pain. I hope you've forgiven. Jesus said to expect it. Parents, brothers, relatives, and friends. And then he says this, they will put some of you to death. And did you hear this in verse 18? But not a hair of your head shall be lost. What? How can that be? They'll put you to death, but not a hair of your head shall be lost. Too late, Lord. Didn't work. Didn't work for me. You can be put to death, but you're not going to be harmed. You're going to be persecuted, but you're not going to be harmed. You're going to be rejected, but you're not going to be harmed. You're going to be betrayed, but you're not going to be harmed. This requires an eternal perspective. This requires knowing our God, that he is merciful and compassionate, gracious. His mercy knows no bounds. His love for you knows no bounds. Do you think that he didn't love these people when he spoke these things to them? Do you think that God's unloving when he allows pain, heartbreak, injury, persecution, wrongful death? Is God unmerciful? Is God unloving? It requires a perspective on life that we need to have and to hold. That this life is not worth holding on to if it means forsaking the next. There is nothing in this life that will satisfy you. It only comes with heartbreak and loss and suffering. Now, we don't even know that so much in this country because we've been coddled too long. We've had padded pews for too long. I just want you to know we're going to change these out and get some hard seats. Train you up. Get you used to hardship. But that isn't that what Jesus is saying? Look, expect it. Expect it. Don't expect life to be easy and comfortable. Now, you can anticipate the next life to be amazing, but not this life, because we live in this realm of opposition with these spiritual opposing forces all around us, and yet within us is the force that created the universe. Within us is the authority to deal with any kind of opposition. Only we're not supposed to fight. We're not supposed to resist. We're supposed to love. Love your enemies. This is not normal. Jesus' instruction to the church is not normal. Don't worry about your life, what you will eat or what you will wear. For life is more than clothing. Life is more than food. Don't hate your enemies. That's what you've been taught. Love your enemies. What does that mean? Feel good about them? No, it means serve them. Do unto them as you would have them do unto you. That's what that means. I love this. Jesus concludes these remarks in verse 19 after saying, not a hair of your head will be lost. By your patience, possess your souls. What does that mean? A very literal translation of that verse is remaining in patient endurance, own your own soul. Remaining in patient endurance, own your own soul. I want to conclude our time together asking you this. Who or what owns your soul today? Is it a relationship? Is your soul focused on a relationship? What does the soul mean? The inmost being, the mind, the will, and the emotions? Is your mind, your will, and your emotions focused more on a relationship, a human relationship? Or a material thing? Who or what owns your soul this morning? What do you think about most? What do you concentrate on? What gives you the most consternation, anxiety? Those are pointers to what owns your soul. What about alcoholism or drug addiction? What about pornography? Lust, envy? Anger, resentment, all of these things want to own your soul. Who owns your soul this morning? Do you possess it? Are you in control of your soul? Jesus said, to be so requires patient endurance. The Greek word is hupomone. I only tell you that to tell you it's made of two verbs, that they mean this, to order under. To be ordered on. It means to endure circumstances, hardship, adversity, persecution. To endure under these circumstances patiently requires a watchfulness and a prayerfulness that Jesus admonishes us to have. Who owns your soul? Will you close your eyes or bow your heads with me? I want to pray. I want to say this, that if there's anybody here that you've allowed your soul to be owned or controlled by some other thing, some other person, some emotion, some desire, some envy, some lust, some hunger other than for God. Jesus invites you to let it go. He's inviting you to repent and let it go. To release that thing to Him. He can manage it when you can't. Who or what owns your soul? Jesus said, you can take possession of it through prayer, through perception, through staying alert to threatening dangers. As we pursue God in these last days, we must be in control of our soul. To abdicate that responsibility is to allow a tyrant to control it, to control you, whether that tyrant be the flesh or whether that tyrant be an angelic messenger of Satan or whether that tyrant be a person. To abdicate the responsibility to own your soul will mean somebody else is in control.